Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Audio Road. Welcome to Trends in Technology. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. Lisa Campbell is your producer and call screener extraordinaire. If you want to join in, simply press 1 on your phone, and Lisa will be right with you. This is the show where we explore what's going on in the trucking industry. It's a mix of new products, new services, and new technology. We'll also bring you expert guests from all areas of the industry, such as Bruce Mallinson on diesel engines and performance, and Mike Beckett on tires and alignment, as well as many others. Sit back, relax, and listen, or jump in with your question or comment. It's up to you. This is your show. Once again, welcome to Trends in Technology, and here we go. Let's head on down the audio road.
Hi, this is Lisa. Remember, to talk to Kevin, press 1 so I can pick up the phone and screen your calls. You know you'd rather talk to me anyway. Or just sit back, relax, and listen to the show. And at any time you have a question, just hit 1 and I'll pick up the phone.
Welcome to Trends and Technology. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. Lisa's here screening your calls. We'll be here for the next hour taking your calls and answering your questions. If you're listening to us online and you'd like to join in on the live call, pick up your phone and dial 347-884-8327. You can listen along on your phone, or if you're on that call and you've got a question, just hit 1 on the phone at any time. Lisa will get to you first, and then we'll get you on the air. We've got a couple of things lined up for tonight. I am going to go back and kind of give you the history of what we've been doing with Evans Coolant. We are a couple weeks into the testing. I've got some numbers for you. Also with me tonight, I have Tom Light, who is the chief engineer from Evans Coolant, and Mike Tourville, who is the director of marketing. And we're going to get a little more in-depth about the product and the benefits, and I'll go over my test numbers. If you've got any questions at all, we can talk about that. We'll open up the phone lines as well for general questions, maintenance, whatever it might be. So if you're listening online, you want to join us, that number again, 347-884-8327. If you're on the call live with us, go ahead and press 1 on your phone. If you've got a question, a comment, a topic, whatever it might be, and we'll be getting to those calls. I'm going to give you a quick rundown, and then I'm going to bring Mike and Tom on with me. It was a little over a year ago, and I'm always looking for new products, new ideas, new technology, whatever it might be. And I came across this waterless coolant. And one of the things that it made me realize at the time was I knew very little about coolant. I really didn't even know a whole lot about the cooling system on the truck. I kind of ignored it unless I had a problem. When I had a problem, I just told the shop to fix it. It was one of the systems on the truck that I probably knew the least about, and I realized that I needed to know more. It's one of the things I do. We talk a lot about maintenance, and I had just kind of ignored that. So I started doing a lot of research on coolant in general. The whole green, red, pink, purple, extended life, it was very confusing to me. I didn't understand what was what. So I did a lot of research, and I did my homework, and I figured out what it was. But what I found really was the only difference in all the coolants I was looking at, it didn't really matter what color they were. You really had the old style of coolant where we had to constantly recharge the additives, and that's why we had a water filter. It wasn't really there to filter anything. It was there to recharge those additives. And then we had the extended life where the additives lasted longer, but they were all really just a mix of glycol and water in some ratio. And that was the the weak point in the system is that there was a lot of water in the system. So while I was doing the research, and I even did a couple shows with some people from the coolant side, and you know, we went over all the differences in the additives and things like that, but I came across the Evans waterless coolant while I was doing that research. So I looked into it, and one of the things that I always do when I find a product is I try to find the other competing product so that you can compare the difference. And there really isn't anything else on the market like this product. There are other coolants, but they're all the same, and this one's different. So I went through all the benefits, and it sounded like a great product. One of the things I do, though, when I'm looking at products is I try to find the downside as well. And I couldn't find one. And the more I looked and the more I couldn't find the downside, the more intrigued I became about the product. So I even went back to the coolant people that I had on the show with me and some of the people that I had talked to doing my homework. And I said, look, I found this other type of coolant out there. Tell me what's wrong with this. What's the problem with this? Why wouldn't I want to use this? And it was interesting because people in the coolant industry really didn't want to talk a whole lot about it, but they really couldn't give me any reason why I shouldn't use it. Some said they didn't know anything about it or it didn't have any history or track record. I mean, I got a lot of non-answers, and I always find that interesting because in my opinion, and I've been doing this a long time looking at different products and evaluating things, is one of the best ways to find out what the potential downsides of a product might be is talk to the competitors. If you ask them, they'll always tell you what the problem is. And nobody could really tell me what the problem was. So I continued my research. I looked at the product. I talked to some people who were using it. And then finally this year, at the Louisville Truck Show, I got to meet up with these guys and decided to finally put this stuff to the test. So we put it in two of our trucks starting on May 10th, and I will go over those results with you here in just a little bit. But right now I'm going to bring Tom Light on with me. And you know what? I think I'm going to bring Mike on first. Let me get these guys straight here. Let's go to Mike. Mike, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Kevin.
Lisa told me I had to put you on the spot first.
I told her I had a couple martinis, and she was real curious how that would sound over the air. So.
Yeah. There you go.
Sure.
So give us a rundown. If I didn't know anything about the product at all, tell me what it is.
All right. Well, first of all, Kevin, I got to say, you said it quite well, probably better than we could have, that little summary that you gave. But really, being, as you said, it's the only waterless coolant available, and that offers some advantages over the traditional water-based coolants. Mainly is that it has a much higher boiling point. The boiling point is 375, which really the main thing is, and Tom likes to mention this a lot, is that it offers a huge separation between the operating temperature and the boiling point of over 150 degrees. The water-based coolants really are, the boiling point is really dangerously close to the operating temperatures of the engine. Being that it does not have water, it's non-corrosive. That'll certainly be a longer-term benefit. But because the main thing, because it can operate, allow the engine to operate warmer, it offers greater efficiency, it reduces fan on time, and I think as you've seen in the last just few short weeks, it offers fuel-saving strategies. And I think
We're going to talk a little bit about that as well, because there's several reasons that I was interested in the product. One was the protection and you know, the all the things that made it such a superior coolant. But then what really got me interested in it, because I do so much with fuel mileage, was the idea that we could, and when I first heard this, I thought, well, that's crazy. How's that going to happen? You know, I hear so many fuel mileage claims from so many products. When I first heard that, you know, there's a coolant on the market that's going to give me better fuel mileage, I thought, oh, now there's a good one. How's that going to happen? But once you see it, then it makes sense. Because it's such a superior coolant, and when you see how it works, we're able to raise the operating temperature of the engine, which makes it more efficient. We're able to keep the fan off, and that's where the fuel mileage savings come from. When you first tell somebody, hey, we're going to put a different coolant in your truck and you're going to get better fuel mileage, that sounds a little crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people don't associate their coolant with fuel savings. They just typically haven't gone together.
No, definitely not. So it's waterless. How, you know, everything else on the market, and a lot of people are confused about coolants because of all the colors. You know, we had green coolants, then we had red coolants, and then it seemed like the manufacturers started making their own color coolants, and I think that was just to kind of distinguish themselves. And, that, you know, we've got extended life coolants, but they're really all just a mix of glycol and water. Mostly water, or at least half water usually, 60-40, 50-50, somewhere around there. So it's the water that's the real weak link in the whole system.
Right. Because of a couple of main things, and Tom may be able to elaborate on this, one is the corrosive nature of water and the low boiling point of water. But it's been a long accepted, the limitations of water have just been long accepted because there has not been, up until now, a better alternative.
Yes, absolutely. Now, how long has the product been around?
Oh, well, actually, this is where you might get Tom in, because it's 20-plus years, I think, since the late 80s, early 90s. But it was mostly used in a high-performance area up until about a year and a half ago.
Okay. Why don't we do that? Why don't I bring Tom on as well, and we can talk about all of these things. Tom Light is the chief engineer at Evans. Tom, welcome to the program.
Nice to be here, Kevin. I would like to comment on some of these areas. Mike mentioned the large separation that we have between the boiling point of our coolant and the operating temperature of the coolant. Other people in the coolant business think they have a separation also, but their separation is quite small. They're pressing the limit with their fluid, which is water-based, and in order to not exceed certain temperatures in the system, they blow a whole lot of air through the radiator at temperatures that we consider rather on the cool side. And the amount of energy that it takes to run that fan to keep these coolants functional cuts into the amount of fuel that the engine needs and is a significant parasite on the whole engine and drivetrain. So by letting us protect engine metals at higher temperatures, which we can do because we're not going into a change of state with a coolant, gives us an advantage that we do not have to blow as much air, if you will, to maintain a coolant temperature because we're not in danger of a failure of our coolant as you would if you hit the boiling point with a water-based coolant.
Yeah, and when you talk about that difference and you know, it used to be fairly common. We ran engines in the 180, 185 range, and you had some room there for error if you were on a long pull. You know, you might get up into the low 200s on some of the pre-EGR engines. But even then, we always risk that shutdown. The shutdown temperatures are sometimes low. But with today's EGR engines, once we get past 04, we're running on a very small margin there because they're already running very hot. One of the biggest challenges for the EGR engines was how did they keep an aerodynamic front on the truck when they had to keep making bigger hoods and bigger radiators in order to get enough airflow in there to keep the engines cool. So, you know, there's certainly an advantage there. What I decided to do was try this on both of my pre-EGR engines so we could bring those temperatures up, those operating temperatures up, and get that efficiency. You know, one of the things that I find from people, some of the resistance is we've always been taught we want to keep our engines running cool. You know, to get them running hot is a bad thing. We don't want an engine to run hot. But really, as long as we can protect it, it's better to run, especially a diesel engine, it's better to run it at that higher temperature. It's much more efficient. Fuel mileage, performance, everything increases. The problem has always been we can't run it up there with traditional coolants. They just don't protect well enough.
That's right. And actually, the way we look at it, we're not running exotically hotter temperatures. It's more of an evolutionary increase in temperature rather than a revolutionary one. But it does put us into an area that you can't go to with a water-based coolant. We're very comfortable running our fan, say, at 230, turning it on at 230, running thermostats that are 215F instead of maybe 190, because we are continuing to protect metals in the engine at higher coolant temperatures because we're not making the water vapor that would otherwise happen with a water-based coolant. So we maintain good heat transfer at these slightly higher temperatures.
Now, this is also a lifetime coolant. I don't have to replace this?
Well, when you get away from the water, the chemistry of the coolant becomes simpler because water is kind of a universal solvent. It likes to dissolve things that it runs into contact with. And that's why you need the chemicals in traditional coolants, and you need to maintain them. You might need supplementary coolant additives and so on. When we don't have the water, the chemistry becomes simpler, and we have additives that are of the kind that do not require water in order to dissolve. And we have enough additives in there that we say our coolant will last the life of the engine. We're talking about a coolant that should not need to be changed the whole history of the engine.
You know, there's so many different things we can talk about as far as the benefits and the reasons to run it. And I'm going to get to some of my test numbers here because I know a lot of people are interested in the fuel mileage aspect of this. One of the ways I've found that when we've got a product that is kind of different from everything else we've looked at, a lot of people don't pay attention to their coolant. They don't understand the cooling system. One of the better ways on these shows to get to some of these points are with questions. And I know we've got a couple. If you're on the call and you've got a question, go ahead and press 1 and Lisa will screen your call. We'll get to those in a couple minutes. I do have a couple from the chat room, so I'm going to stop for just a second. And both of these are probably for you, Tom. Here's the first one from the chat room. If you adjust your fan on temp, how will that affect your fan on when it deals with your AC?
Generally speaking, the fan is controlled by the ECM or the engine computer that's in the truck. And typically, the ECM receive the signals from various sources. One of the signals would be, say, from the head pressure of the condenser on your AC system. When the pressure exceeds a certain PSI, it's going to turn the fan on. There's probably a temperature sensor for your charge air cooler, for the air that goes through your intercooler. If that temperature exceeds a certain point, the fan is going to turn on in order to drive more air through the charge air cooler. Now, the signal that we work from would be from the coolant temperature sensor, and that is the signal that we would modify, and that could be modified either by reprogramming of the ECM to set higher values for the fan on temperature, or in most cases for us, because we don't get a great deal of cooperation from engine OEMs to do reprogramming, we use what we call a resistor pack that we put in series with the coolant temperature sensor, and that makes the ECM think the coolant is at a lower temperature than it really is. And in that way, let's say the ECM is programmed to turn the fan on at, say, 210F. With our resistor pack now, when it sees 230F, it thinks it's 210F. If the ECM thinks it's just doing the same thing that it always has been, turning the fan on at 210F. But actually, it's 230F because our resistor pack is in place. The resistor pack would also increase the fan off temperature, assuming it is not a timed event. If it is a temperature event, it would turn the fan off at a higher temperature. And it would also increase the derating temperature so that we have room for the higher fan on temperature. So to answer your question, we are not going to be affecting the air conditioning circuit because the fan is going to come on based on demands of what the AC system needs, and it will also come on for the demands of the charge air cooling system.
Got it. One of the things that I've found, and when I started looking at this, I started digging a little deeper, is when, especially in a line haul operation, when we're heading down the road at cruise speed, top gear, very, very seldom does that fan ever come on because of the AC head pressure. It's almost always because of coolant temperature, and that's where we're making the change. In stop-and-go traffic, sometimes we'll find that the AC is what will cause the fan to come on. So in a line haul operation with the resistor pack in place, the fan does stay off quite a bit. So, you know, there's a couple different ways to look at this product. The first one being just the benefits of a better coolant, better engine protection, less corrosive, lifetime coolant, better protection against cavitation, less pressure in the system, all of those things that make it a better coolant. That was one way to look at it. The other way was the fuel mileage improvements. And just to let everybody know again, that's achieved two ways. One, by running the engine at a slightly higher temperature, not a real high temperature, but bringing that engine operating temperature up a little bit and keeping it consistent, we improve the efficiency of the engine. When the engine is operating at that warmer temperature, we get better and more complete combustion of the fuel, so we get better performance and better fuel mileage. And the second way is that if we keep that fan off because the coolant itself is more efficient, then we don't have the parasitic loss from the engine. So those were, and I've said this many, many times, when I look at products, and especially products that make fuel mileage claims, we have to look at it logically first. Is there some logical reason why this would work? And as soon as that was explained to me, it made logical sense. And we look at the physics of things, and the physics all made sense. So then it comes down to, okay, this is worth giving it a shot and running some tests. So we started on May 10th. We've got it in two trucks. And I was expecting, I was hoping to get a solid 2/10 out of this. And I would have been very happy with 2/10. Now, on one of the trucks that we put it in, we started at 6.76 miles to the gallon. That was the 30-day running average prior to doing the conversion to the Evans coolant. That was, we tested it on about 10,000 miles. 6.76 was the running average. The overall average for the year was actually a little lower than that. It was 6.5. Now we've got, let me check some quick numbers here, how many miles we've got on this part of the test. I believe we've got almost 5,000 miles since the conversion on this truck, and we've come up from 6.76 to 7.3. There was a much bigger increase than I expected. And we're going to continue to watch this one over the next couple weeks. That's up a full half mile per gallon based on the prior 30-day average. So that was pretty exciting. You know, if I look at the numbers on that truck, and I'm going to continue to watch this. I have a feeling we might have had a couple things going on here. But based on those numbers, in my operation with today's fuel price, that's an annual savings of over $4,000. That's pretty significant. Now, on the second truck that we put it on, the second truck has been very, very consistent on fuel mileage. The first truck has been climbing a little bit over the last 30 days. That's why the 30-day average was higher than the year average. And it, that truck has been climbing. Now, the second truck we put it on has been very consistent in fuel mileage, which is, it makes for a really accurate test, even in a shorter period of time. Now, this truck has also had at a higher fuel mileage, so it becomes more difficult to squeeze out those improvements. The better fuel mileage we get, the harder it is to get the improvements, and the smaller the savings is. But on this truck, we started with a 30-day running average of 7.58, and right now, after, I think this truck probably has about 6,000 miles on the test, maybe a little more, we're at 7.71. So we've picked up that 2/10 that we were looking at, which is exactly what I was hoping to see, and we're looking at an annual savings, even though we're already up on fuel mileage on this one, of about $1,000. So we have quite a bit less than a year break even and return on investment. So I was very happy when we start with a truck that's already in the mid sevens and we bring it up into the high sevens. That's a pretty significant increase. So I am pretty excited about this. If you want to check out the numbers yourself, you can see it tank by tank. If you're if you've got a subscription on Fuel Gauges, you can track the two trucks there, and I'll give you the truck numbers now. Go into Fuel Gauges and look for truck number 7796 and truck number 8958. If you're not on Fuel Gauges, you can go to letstruck.com. Under the forums, you will see them right at the top. We've got them as the featured forums. And it doesn't update itself on every tank in there, but I go in about once a week, and I update all the numbers, so you can follow along on that as well. And I'm going to get back to Tom here And I've got another question from the chat room. Tom, here was another, and this was I had this same concern in the beginning. From the chat room, it says, what happens if you have the Evans coolant in your system and somebody puts water in the cooling system? What's going to happen? They wanted to know if it was going to gel up.
No, it won't gel up. But the problem is that we do not have protection, corrosion protection against what water can do. There are, for example, we have no silicates in our coolant. And the reason we don't want silicates is that silicates require water in order for the silicates to remain dissolved. So they would drop out of our solution, so we would not have them in there to begin with. So the problem is if you contaminate the coolant with water, you will lose a number of benefits. Corrosion would be a problem. And if you put in enough water, all of a sudden you're back to boiling point issues because you're going to drive the boiling point of the coolant downward. So what we would say is, okay, if you have a problem and you have to limp back to home base and there's nothing around that you can put in but water, go ahead and put the water in, get yourself home. But you really would need to redo the coolant installation at that point. Someday we're going to have our coolant for sale in locations all over the country. That's our objective. And when that happens, you'll be able to get supplies if you have that kind of a problem on the road. But right now, if you have a leak, if you have you lose a hose, for an emergency situation, you can put water in there to get yourself back. And maybe it's okay to run the water for a couple of weeks, but you should be looking to reinstall the waterless coolant.
Okay, so it's not a huge disaster. We can put whatever we need in the system to get us up and running in, like you said, even a week or two. There's no immediate danger of doing any damage to the system or the engine. We're just going to degrade the performance somewhat of the Evans until we can get it back into the system.
Yeah, Kevin, the main thing is to not forget about it and then a year later say, could have done something,
right.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm pretty sure anybody who's, especially, you know, our market is really owner-operators. You know, I've got to watch my drivers because I have drivers in my truck, and I need to make sure that they're clear on the fact that we've got this waterless coolant in there, and if they ever have to put anything in, they need to let me know. But an owner-operator driving his own truck, if something ever were to happen, he would be right on top of it, so I don't really see that as a concern. What is the process? Could you walk us kind of step by step through the process of how we would convert to this?
Yes. Well, one of my jobs is to learn how to do conversions that will rather completely remove the old coolant in the system, and then write a procedure so that other people will be able to do the same thing. And the reason that I came down to work with your two trucks was that I had some improvements on how to get the water out of the system that we used on your trucks to make the process more efficient. But basically, here it is. Let's talk about a Detroit Diesel Series 60. What is the conversion involved? Well, you do the normal things. Of course, you drain the radiator. You pull the bottom hose off the radiator so that you're draining the very bottom of the radiator. And then you leave that hose open. And then you go around and There are certain obvious places where coolant can collect that's hard to get out. One of those is the heater circuits. Those lines have to be blown out, and then we would suggest a chaser using some coolant, some waterless coolant used as a chaser. You put that through the heater, and you blow air through so that you're actually using coolant that'll mix with residual water-based coolant and help you remove that. A really helpful thing to do, where normally you would be replacing the thermostats with higher temperature units, so you're going to open the thermostat housing, and when you do that, now you have a window into the engine that gives you the opportunity to blow air through the cylinder head, down through the block, through other ancillary systems such as the charge air cooler. And that normally your exit point is through the coolant pump and out the lower hose. We would also recommend pouring some waterless coolant through the thermostat housing and using that as and chasing it out with more air. And in that way, we can fairly completely remove the water from the system. You still have, if you have a coolant filter, that's going to be a location that you have to drain that, and actually that filter should be replaced with one that has no chemicals in it. We don't want to add any more chemicals. And as far as the air sources, we recommend high volume air sources rather than say shop air, which is high pressure but generally low volume. What we want to do is to just be pushing coolant out of places, and we find that there are products that you can use to as air sources that give you a high volume. One of those would be a portable Makita blower. We use a product called an air blaster. Actually, we use that on your engines. This is a unit that it looks like a vacuum cleaner, except all it does is blow air. But you know, you could also use a shop vac. The blower end of a shop vac is okay to use. You have to make sure the shop vac is clean, so you're not going to be putting any dirt in the engine. But if you have a clean supply of air with a decent volume, that'll work just fine for pushing that coolant, the old coolant, out of your engine. And that's pretty much what our procedure involves. Naturally, we have a lot more detail in our procedure, and we would make that available to anybody who would be interested in doing a conversion.
Yeah, but it's really, you know, you could get into a lot of detail, but it's pretty simple and logical. We're looking throughout the whole system. We're trying to get as much of the old coolant and water out of there as possible. And like you say, you do it by draining, by putting some forced air through, by using some of the waterless coolant to go in and help us chase out some of the old coolant. Once that's all done, really just button the system back up, put everything back together, and then put in the Evans coolant, correct?
That's right. What you have to get away from is the idea that you're just going to open the petcock on the radiator.
Yeah.
And the job is done.
Right.
That is not true. You have to do more. You have to think about the nooks and crannies and do it like you're doing it on purpose.
Yeah, okay. A couple more questions from the chat room. One, we've talked about boiling points in the high temperatures. What about the low temperatures? Does it freeze?
This coolant really has a very low, what they call a poor point. The ASTM establishes standards for coolants and so on, and they have many kinds of tests. So they have a freezing point test, but that freezing point test is for aqueous coolants. And when we attempted to test our coolants using that aqueous test, we got phony results. they look at intersections of curves to determine the freezing point. Well, really, we found that the best way to do your freezing point is to, take some coolant, put it in a freezer at 40 to below zero, and see what happens. What happens with our coolant, it gets thicker, but it does not freeze. And so we say, fine, we know our pour point is way below minus 40, and that's really good enough for any point in this country. We're pretty happy with our coolant. And there is one more thing I would add, and that is that water is about the only element that actually expands when it freezes. And the expansion of water when it freezes is what damages engine blocks or radiator cores and so on. If you did actually go to a temperature cold enough to solidify our coolant, it would shrink upon solidifying. It's nowhere where we can go with it because it's so cold. You won't find any place cold enough to make it solidify. But if it were to solidify, it would actually shrink. So
yeah, it doesn't cause the damage. That's interesting. Another question from the chat room. What about the thermal expansion of stuff like cylinder heads when we're running at these higher temperatures?
If we're running at a slightly higher temperature, you will have a slightly higher expansion of metals. But I think you have to look at it on a percentage basis, and you actually. The percentage that you would be computing would be, you start at absolute zero, and then if you increase your temperature by, 30 or 40 degrees, what additional expansion are you really seeing? And the answer is it is a very tiny percentage, so it really is not an issue. We have thermal expansion of the liquid itself, but it is really on par with the expansion that you would have with a water-based coolant. It does not differ greatly.
Well, we've also got some questions on the live call here now, and I want to start getting to those before we run out of time. Let's go to Texas. Hugh, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Kevin. You've been on this for about 3 weeks now, and what do you have to say about return on investment?
Certainly looks good from my point of view. After learning about the product, this was one of those things that I would be happy with the benefits of the product alone.
Right.
Looking at it from a maintenance point of view, a long-term cost point of view, I was just happy with the benefits of the product. So fuel savings was like the icing on the cake. That was the bonus. And the great thing is it turns out that on my trucks, the break-even point is going to be 6 or 7 months. And the return on investment is nice on the fuel saving side, plus I get all the benefits.
So 6 or 7 months return on investment and the lifetime of the truck of reduced maintenance costs, as well as a longer engine life? Are we looking at longer engine life from using this?
Well, you know, the one thing, and I'll let Tom jump in on this, the one problem that we see caused by coolants is when the additives aren't kept up with in either coolant, the green coolant, the extended life coolant. When the additives are depleted for whatever reason, we start to run the risk of cavitation of the cylinder liners, and we just never know what's happening. I mean, it's one of those things that until it breaks all the way through, we have no indication that cavitation is happening. And I think, and Tom, I'll let you jump in, I think if we don't have that cavitation, that yes, we are looking at longer engine life here.
Well, yes, I'd like to comment on the cylinder liner cavitation erosion. It really is the biggest corrosion issue in a heavy-duty engine. You have cylinder liners that vibrate along with the movement of the piston, so you set up pressure waves adjacent the coolant adjacent to the cylinder liner is constantly going through low and high pressure areas, and when it undergoes a low pressure area, and if the coolant's near its boiling point, you make vapor, and that vapor collapses on the opposite side of that cycle. And when that cycle is repeated, you know, over a long period, you have a hammering on that wall, and you scrub the surface, and you get the wormholes that eat through the liner. The ASTM has recently adopted what is known as the John Deere Engine Cavitation Test. And this is a test that's done on a dynamometer that running 250 hours. The engine selected is very aggressive toward cavitation erosion. In other words, they've picked an engine that will show accelerated damage. If there is this cavitation erosion going on, you're going to see it in this John Deere engine. Many coolants have been tested, and our coolant, we purchased a test session from the company that provides this service, and our results totally blew away every other coolant that they ever tested. And I will just say that there's a figure of merit of about 200 that relates to tiny marks or let's say incipient pits, and that is the accepted result. If you achieve a rating of 200, you pass the test. Well, lower numbers are better, and we blew away everybody else, and we had a result of 21. And the second place coolant is 80 something. So we're pretty comfortable that we have a superior coolant to protect against that type of corrosion in the engine.
So if you have a high mileage engine, 800,000 miles, where some cavitation has probably already occurred, but not enough to actually start showing up as engine damage. Switching to the Evans coolant would kind of stop the cavitation at the point where it is now, and you may never have a problem from it?
That would be a pretty good surmise. Definitely, our coolant would slow the process way down and probably stop it.
Great. So what's the downside?
Yeah. Well, I couldn't get anybody from the coolant industry to come up with any reasonable downside. They didn't really want to talk much about it, though.
I better let you get to the other callers.
Yeah, I was just going to say, we've got a bunch of calls here, and time's getting away from me again. Let's go to Ed in Colorado. Ed, welcome to the program.
Oh, I got two questions. One, GM has had a problem with
head gaskets being ate up by this next cool stuff. Is it, we're talking about diesels, but I guess this is good for gasoline motors. And then the other question is, you know, everybody, you, Kevin, are doing your oil samples. Does this have some of the same properties as that would be in glycol coolant that would be picked up if there is a leak?
Now, that's a good question, and with all the talk we do of oil samples, I hadn't thought to ask about that. Tom, if when I'm checking my oil samples, one of the things we always watch for are the indications that we've got a coolant leak. Is this something I should be letting my lab know that we've got a different coolant in the engine, and will they be able to test for this?
I assume that they their test is for glycols and or maybe I'm not sure if they're testing what if they test for water with glycols or glycols alone. I would think they're looking for glycols. And if you see them in the oil, that would be an indication that you're leaking from the cooling system into the oil system. Our coolant is a blend of glycols, no water, and the additives are specific for a waterless blend so that we don't have any additive dropout because we're running so very concentrated.
Got it.
Now,
you know, one of the things I'll do, we have a great relationship with the lab, so I will run this by them as well, and maybe we'll even send some over and get their, you know, figure out how it's going to affect the oil analysis as far as what kind of numbers we should be looking for. I want to get to a couple more calls here real quick. Let's go to Eldon in Nebraska. Eldon, welcome to the program.
Hi, guys. I'm... My question was the one about the
thermal expansion. Hey, Eldon, there you go. Get real close to the phone and speak up. We can barely hear you.
Okay, is that any better?
A little better. Keep it loud.
Okay. I was asking about the thermal expansion, and I'm also wondering about where you, like, for instance, if you have an engine with aluminum pistons, and you're running at a higher temperature, you're going to reduce the clearance in the cylinder, and that's kind of a thing that would cause a failure in, you know, with conventional coolant. So I just wondered if, you know, those type of failures with from overheating, like head gasket failures and liners type of failures, you know, scuffing and so on, are going to occur.
Well, again, the amount of temperature increase is evolutionary rather than revolutionary. The percentage of increase is modest. So we don't think you're going to see that type of thing happening, scuffing and so on. I think you would have to go to much higher temperatures in order to cause that situation. Where we are really only talking about modestly higher temperatures from where we are now. We're not advocating sharply higher temperatures. Our coolant boils at 375 F. We're not talking about going anywhere near that kind of temperature. So we hear people being concerned by all kinds of things. For example, under hood temperature. You know, what are we doing to this and that? When we do a conversion, generally the report is that the driver doesn't notice anything, doesn't notice it being hotter or anything. And basically, our temperature elevation in the scheme of things, is rather modest.
Yeah, it really is. It's small. We're not talking about giant increases in temperature. And you know, I think we're also talking about keeping those temperatures more consistent than we see with the water-based coolants as well. We're also going to head to Jersey this time. Lance, welcome to the program.
Good evening. I had a couple questions. One is, like, on the environmental side, is there an environmental reason to switch over to Evans, as the you know, glycol has to be recycled and can be hazardous? And two, you know, there's other specialized lubricants out that people use for cooling super duper large maritime engines and even nuclear reactors. Is Evans anywhere along that line, or is it even better?
Okay, let's see. I can tell you about the environmental side a little bit here. Ethylene glycol, as you know, carries all kinds of warnings, and that is because when it is ingested, it metabolizes in your system, and the metabolites that result from that are really the items that poison you. It is not the ethylene glycol itself. It's what it turns into in your system that causes all the damage and death and so on. Our research showed that when we added propylene glycol into the an ethylene glycol system, that the propylene glycol acts as an enzyme inhibitor, preventing the metabolism of ethylene glycol into its poisonous components. We tested on, we hired a laboratory, and we tested all kinds of mixtures. And what we found was that that we could not kill rats with our mixtures. Certain mixtures were so non-toxic that we could completely fill the stomach of these laboratory rats, and they simply gained weight, and none of them perished. So, in terms of an environmental situation, you know, we think that if you spill some, it is far less toxic than any conventional ethylene glycol based coolant. You have another question.
Hey, Tom, I'm going to jump in here because we're just about out of time, and I think I'm going to bring Mike back on here as well. We're down to about 2 minutes. If people are interested in this and they want to get more information, or they want to find out about a conversion, what's the first step? If somebody's on the call right now and they're interested, what do they do?
Well, I think the first thing is to give us a call, and I can give you that number right now if you'd like.
Yes, please.
860-668-1114, and they can ask for any of us at that number, and we'll answer the questions, and they can order, and we'll do everything we can for them.
All right, and let me go over that number again, because a lot of times guys are driving, and they were just reaching for the pen. It's 860-668-1114. Is that correct?
Correct.
Got it. Okay, here it is one more time. 860-668-1114. If they call that number, they can ask questions, they can find out about the conversion, and you will work with them to help get that done, correct?
Yes, and I would also suggest, if anybody would like more information, they might be able to, if they go on our website, www.evanscooling.com, they'll probably learn a lot from that as well.
And we're the coolant itself is right at about $40 a gallon. Is that correct?
It's the retail price is $42.95 for a gallon. Yes.
So, and most systems are somewhere in that 10-gallon range. So you're looking at $400 to $500 in initial coolant. You've got some labor. It's always good to have an extra case or two to just throw in the truck and keep there. So we're in that, you know, $500 to $700 range, and that's where I came up with my numbers for the break even and the return on investment. And Tom and Mike, I want to thank you guys, and we will probably get back again sometime soon to answer more questions.
Sure. Thanks for having us, Kevin.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. Great talking to you and your people.
All right, and we will be in touch. I'm going to continue running the test for another couple weeks, and I'll get back to you on all my numbers as far as fuel mileage and savings. Thanks for joining me tonight. Remember, be safe, be profitable, be responsible, and master the journey. Good night, everyone. I will see you live in 30 minutes on Sirius and XM.